Hello, folks. It's my pleasure to be here, just like it is every week, as the host of the Rec Poker Podcast. I've got the best freaking job in the world, so I get to hang out here on Monday nights and talk to my poker friends about this game that we love so much. My name's Jim Reed. I'm at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter, and just Jim in the Rec Poker home games, and the Rec Poker website, and Bluffsterini in the home game. So come and steal my chips 10 to 11 times a week in the home game series run by John Somsky. I love being a part of Rec Poker. I'm so glad I joined as a premium member back in 2019. Most of what we do here at Rec Poker is free, so I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, who we will be visiting on August 4th and 5th. Everything's going great tonight, guys. We're doing really well on every front. That's going to be super fun. Rec Poker weekend at Running Aces. I can't wait to go meet some old friends and make some new friends at the same time. But this is the forums edition of the podcast, which means I'm joined here by the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to find out more about me or the other members of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew. But just listen up, because you're going to meet a few of them on the air right here, right now.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5v5 on Threads or 5x5 in the PokerStars home game.
My name is Joe Kulis, and you can find me still on Twitter at JoeCoolPhD, cool with a K, or Elvita11 in the home game.
And I am John Somsky, and I am PokerGeekMN everywhere.
And I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Rabman50 everywhere, including Threads and Twitter and wherever.
The great migration has begun. We'll see. I started the new Threads account, but I'm gonna hold off on spending any time there until Twitter like officially crashes and burns. It's a burning hellscape right now, but until it's like actually post-apocalyptic, mutants roaming the land, that kind of thing, I'm gonna stick it out and see if we can pull one out. Okay, well, thanks everybody, thanks for joining me here tonight. This is the forums edition of the podcast. Like I was saying, it's the very first live on YouTube forums edition of the podcast. I see we've got Charles Allen, among a few others in the YouTube chat, Evil Roy Slade, our man Dave in there, and a couple others I can tell. So if folks are just listening, we're doing our very first forums edition on YouTube. We're going to follow this up with the chats edition a little later on tonight. But this is going to be fun. If you've got any questions about what's coming up, then feel free to type away. We are going to be looking at a post in the Rec Poker forums. They're free, by the way, along with so much of the other great stuff we do around here. This is one by Outfocus Metal. Outfocus Metal is a user here at Rec Poker. He has typed in our forums before, and I think we'll be hearing more from this player. The question that Outfocus Metal is posting is, what's the best way to practice GTO? And they say, I'm looking to practice pure GTO with no exploitative play, but I'm really struggling at lower levels where the exploits are so obvious. While that's not bad per se, it's difficult for me to differentiate between good GTO deviation and me just reverting back to my old non-GTO based style of play. He gives an example here and says, my local pub game is the cheapest MTT available. So I go along and promise myself I'll stick to GTO regardless of opponent or action. Then Old Man Coffee calls the preflop raise for the ninth hand in a row. And as I know he will 100% bet when he hits and 100% call when he's chasing a draw, I raise with absolutely everything regardless of our ranges. I can't stop myself doing it. So is it better to avoid these low stake games if I could afford to lose a wedge of cash practicing at higher levels? So not a bankroll, but a practice fund. Or am I missing the difficulties at those higher levels as well? And then they conclude their post by saying, also interested to hear if people think I should never be trying to play pure GTO live and instead sign up for practice tools like DTO for that. So we did get some excellent responses here in the Rec Poker forums from Chris Jones, from Rob Washam. Outfocus Metal responds a couple times. We're going to get into those. I think the one thing that jumped out at me from this post, which is a pretty common mistake or a common, no, I think it's a mistake that players make as they're getting more into GTO and they're learning about it and they're getting excited about it and kind of seduced by it. They want to go and apply it in all these places where I don't think its application is really warranted. And the problem is, and I think Outfocus Metal kind of knows this from the way that they're describing their posts, the players at those low stakes, at those entry tournaments that you're playing, they're just making so many mistakes that you don't need to be playing defense. And GTO is basically about playing defense. It's about being unexploitable yourself. At this level, you're going to be much better off just taking advantage of the mistakes that your opponents make. And if you play GTO, you're sort of like bringing a very fancy tool to a knife fight. And you're just going to get stabbed repeatedly by these people with these very simple tools that are much better at stabbing than your fancy tool. That's a butchered way. I shouldn't even have started first. Okay, Chris, you put a really good post up here. I've set the table by sounding terrible. So anything that you come up with now is going to be amazing. Why don't you dazzle our audience with some actually well-crafted words in response to this post?
Setting the table with knives. But
yeah. Hey, see, at least there was like a narrative theme throughout it.
I have lots of fancy tools that I bring to any knife fight. I think that's the lesson learned here. It's just bring some fancy tools to any kind of knife fight.
A gun is not pretty good in a knife fight.
That's true. That's pretty fancy. That's pretty fancy.
I suppose that is pretty fancy. Some yes, indeed. So I think, you know, one of the things that I just immediately would respond to this is we learn GTO for a variety of reasons. And I think there's this sort of misunderstanding that like what we're learning is how to play. But what we're learning is what is the baseline at which we are starting our approach to play. And then how are we going to make adjustments based on the assumption, the correct assumption in most sense, unless we're playing against like Ollie and Servich doing some RTAing, is that humans are not going to play perfectly. And so we're going to make adjustments to that. But if we can, as you know, even approximate what some of the best approaches would be as a baseline. Now we know like, okay, if my opponent is completely balanced, right? I'm going to open down to, I'm just making something up just randomly. Like I'm opening up down to pocket sixes and Jack 10 suited and King Queen offsuit, right? That's what I'm going to do if they're perfectly balanced. But now I know that, well, my opponent, or I'm learning maybe that my opponent isn't perfectly balanced and maybe they're going to be way, 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 way too wide and be kind of erratic. Well, now I maybe can open up a little bit wider, or now I know that they're a total rock and they're only going to play like queens plus. Well, now I'm going to take that range that I know kind of intuitively goes down to pocket sixes and goes to Jack 10 suited and King Queen offsuit. And I'm going to say, well, Jack 10 suited is out. So are pocket sixes and on up the chain, because that my opponent's only coming back at me with a much tighter range. So there's ways that this helps us when we say things like, oh, now I need to tighten up against this opponent. We might not even know what that means unless we understand GTO, right? But it's not that we're actually taking this and playing it out in the wild, especially as our correspondent talks about in a bar league where we've got a player that we have a perfect exploit against and we know exactly what they're doing every time they raise, every time they call. Well, let's keep playing that exploit because we know, I mean, there is zero reason to play them GTO. So I think when we want to practice GTO, that's where these tools that the correspondent mentions are great. Like DTO, GTO Wizard, these kind of things, we can just play them in the lab. We can kind of learn as we're going. And that helps us understand how we're going to approach and make adjustments against players, but it's not going to be how we play. That's how I'd start.
Yeah. And I think anyone else, of course, jump in, but as Chris is saying, If we know our opponents are going to make certain errors, like let's say our opponent only ever three bets with pocket aces, then we don't need to have a four betting strategy that involves a polarized range or a linear range. We can just play it. We can play fully exploitatively. We don't have to worry about balance. We don't have to worry about is our opponent going to find our play predictable? And when you don't need to worry about that kind of stuff, GTO is just, it just tells you where to start from. And then you decide where to deviate from there. Rob, you unmuted first, then I think Joe had something else you wanted to add.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that we've said so far. We're now currently studying GTO Poker Simplified by Dara Carney with Barry Carter in our book study. And one of the things that Dara is professing is that by using a GTO strategy at even at the micro stakes levels, it allows you to move up in stakes and be able to continue to improve and continue to not be exploited at the next level. What he's saying is what you're doing is you're creating this unexploitable version of your poker strategy that you don't have to worry what happens when you go up to the next level. Because as they say, at each level, there are different exploits that are will help you make more money. And that's very true. But if you concentrate on the level you're on today and you get all the exploits down and now your strategy is full of all those exploits, then you go up to the next level, you have to start all over again. Because you, the exploits are going to be different at the next level as you increase. So what he's professing is that you get that basic GTO strategy that is unexploitable by your opponents and work on it and work on it and then move up in the stakes accordingly. You're going to have an easier time at each level that you advance.
Joe, did you have something there?
Yeah, I just think that when you look at GTO strategy, right? I mean, that's an enormous concept. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes in the same way that we can't really understand variance very well, we can't really understand the enormity of what a GTO strategy would look like in play. So I think that in addition to what everything else has been said, is like you have to plan when you're saying I'm going to start implementing a GTO strategy, you really have to start breaking it down to sections and groups and say, well, this is what I do. This is what I'm going to work at on that time. And you're going to find that as you practice something, regardless of where you are, as you go back to your regular game, your performance is going to slip. And you have to just kind of accept that that's going to be the case in those particular areas because you start thinking harder about what things are going on. And it's much easier to play a simplified strategy because you can apply that consistently and always have a good idea. Whereas if you're in an online environment, you got 30 seconds to make a decision, which means you're essentially... So I'm going to go and talk about some brain things here and or it's going to be actually accurate. But when you're thinking about how the brain utilizes information, I may have said this before, you want less of your brain to be involved when you're doing tasks efficiently and well, because you're allocating less resources. There's less thinking and essentially higher level processing that's going on and it becomes almost automatic. So even athletes will talk about this when you do fMRI scans, these scans that show functional activities in brains, they calm down when they're doing an activity that we do well because they can allocate resources differently for that strategy and they've kind of made it automatic. You're now going to step away from that if you're playing well and make your strategy more difficult, use more of your brain, allocate more of your resources, have more uncertainty, which is going to make you more inefficient in terms of doing that task and make more mistakes. So you really have to go into any of these self-improvements to say, all right, I'm gonna play worse for a while. And that's okay, but I'm going to play worse in this very specific area because I don't want it to be brought across to my entire game. So say you're working on middle and pocket pairs. Well, I'm going to play my middle pocket pairs worse and I'm going to lose some EV with them. But other aspects of my range or other aspects of my strategy, I'm going to stick to the same progress because then I can make money and support my bankroll during the time when I am losing money within other parts of my range. And that way you don't feel quite like it's a disaster every time you try to implement GTO and it falls apart and you lose every last dime that you won over the last month because you tried to get better.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that is very common for people. That's why my dad, who was a golfer, would often say, like, don't practice on the course, practice on the range, and then go just play. When you're out there to play, just play, let your brain take care of itself. And it's common when you're trying new things for that to affect your results, because you're going to be less comfortable, you're going to be less confident, less sure about things, and you're going to feel like you might be or making mistakes. So don't let that get you down either. I think that's very natural. Rob?
We also talked a little bit about some of the apps out there that we can use to practice GTO, right? Like DTO, APT, GTO Wizard, those types of things. And those are really great. But if you don't have a basic understanding of what GTO is to begin with, just jumping in and doing those drills is not going to teach you much. It's just going to tell you when you're wrong or when you're right, but it's not going to tell you why you're wrong or that you're right. So I think before you start actively using those types of training tools to get a basic understanding of what GTO means and how it works in poker.
And I think, and that's where I'll make one more comment here about Outfocus Metal and their response. And unless there's anything else, we'll probably wrap it up for this episode. So Outfocus Metal responds. So yeah, there's some great responses here. And I do encourage our listeners, it's free. Go. I'll put the link to this forum post in the show notes. You don't even need a free Rec Poker account to view the forum post. You can just click on the link and view it for free as a visitor. But I would encourage our folks, come get a free Rec Poker account. All it takes is an email address and a smile, and you can respond to posts. You can post yourself. You can take advantage of a lot of the great stuff that we do here for free, like the Home Game Club, the Discord channel, our Twitch channel, the YouTube stuff. It's so much free stuff here. And the forums are really something that our members tell us that's where they made some steps is in their own poker journey by sharing these spots with other people. So to wrap things up for Outfocus Metal here, in response to some of these posts, responses, they say, I'm not trying to practice GTO or play GTO per se. I'm trying to embed the GTO principles in my play by practicing. And I want to do that in the live play, as my game is so different live than when I'm playing online. And I think that's the right attitude, Outfocus Metal, but I want to encourage you, I don't think any of us should be embedding the GTO principles in our play. I think we should be embedding the GTO principles in our overall strategy that we then, every time we walk to a table, we then make a more specific strategy, a more tailored strategy for the people that we're going to be playing against. And knowing where to start from, like GTO tells you how to extract every possible cent of EV out of every hand on the grid. And it does it in a way that's as balanced as possible and as unexploitable as possible. But again, like we've sort of been saying throughout this episode, that's not a practical strategy in the games that we're playing. So using it as the foundation from which we deviate is a great way to do it. And I would say embed those GTO principles in your theory, but not in your play. And then just think about how to deviate from it to take advantage of the errors that the people at your game are playing. And Joe?
Yeah. So I have an example if we still have time. If not, I can.
Yes. No, we do. Please.
So, and it just happened recently in terms of how I use it. So I use GTO Wizard, and I had a spot in a 50 NL cash game that I was playing where I had tens. Somebody that had been three betting me at the table, repeatedly from the small blind. And so I decided to four bet. And then on the river, I do three quarter bet and he jams. All right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, what do I do? So I decided to call, and he had a set of sevens. And luckily I nailed the river. My 10 came in and I was like, hey, you know, look at me. And then I'm like, no, the question is that lucky or was it a good play? And I thought this terrible play, right? This guy, he jams, he's got a set or better, at least two pair, and I'm beat, or better over pair for that matter. When I looked at GTO Wizard, the only thing that it actually complained about was that my flop bet was too big. And I thought that was very interesting. So I decided I was going to utilize that and see how it would work. And then in the home game yesterday, I got tens and I was like, fantastic. And then this individual whose name is, I'm going to I'm going to make it anonymous so nobody knows who it is, but San Momsky from Utah three bet me. And I said, I know the exact play to go. And so I four bet him. So I called. And then, which was what the GTO said it was supposed to do. And then I came and I had an overpair. And I said, okay, I can bet here. I know the exact amount to bet. And then that person jammed. And I said, I know I'm supposed to call. And he turned over a set of eights and I didn't win. So now, why am I telling this besides the funny thing that John put me out of the tournament yesterday? Is that it showed me exactly what the unexploitable play is, right? Because GTO shows you that against a perfect opponent, they could have enough unpaired hands that the four bet is okay at a frequency. And by always calling, you always eliminate the fact that you have aces in your range. So it tells you something about how to play. But in both instances, I was playing against players who are not perfect. John's nearly perfect, but not
very
quite
close.
Perfect. Right?
Yeah,
very
quite close.
And as a result, facing a jam, I don't care what GTO says anymore. It's a fold. It's a fold. It's a fold. It's a fold. If I only have an overpair, because I'm probably facing something that's going to beat me. And I think that's, to me, conceptualized in this hand, like how to use it, how to determine what GTO is, why it's making those decisions, but also why you don't want to listen to it sometimes, because you got to get lucky on the river then.
Yeah. John?
Yeah. So sorry about that. I got lucky and flopped a set there.
Yeah, it sounds like you got the chips in good, John. I wouldn't take anything away from that.
But so I think it's important to understand that GTO is not about saying what is the best play in this spot. What it is, it's about creating a range of plays, a range of hands, a range of raises that leave you to be unexploitable. So it doesn't matter what hand Mom Jomsky had in that, whatever. It doesn't matter what they had in that particular hand. You cannot be exploited. Now, it may not be the ideal hand. Given the way I'm sure there's a more exploitable way of playing against me, but GTO is all about leaving yourself unexploitable. When you learn that, then you can figure out where to deviate from that based upon the errors that your players, other players are making. And I know I make a ton of them. So Joe could have done better by not playing GTO against me.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe?
I was going to say you played that one pretty darn well.
Yeah, you got the max. Got the max.
Jammed
on that.
All in, well, and you got me to call right in the back end.
Well, I'm not going to complain about that. No.
Yeah. And hey, flopping sets, that is a Blusterini approved method of profiting in the world of poker. So for some of us, it's all we have. That's all I'm saying. You know, go get that cheddar, John. So yeah, Rob.
I was just going to say there's one other concept that we haven't discussed here that I think is very important when we talk about GTO. And that is that GTO is a strategy that informs you how to play all the hands in your range.
Yes.
So that when you do have value, you get paid. If the only time you raise or go all in is you have pocket aces, everybody's going to fold and you're never going to get paid. So you need to have a balanced range of different hands that you show up with. So when people see that, they understand that just because you bet doesn't mean you always have it. But you're going to have it enough between your value and your bluffs that you're going to get paid when you have value. And that's how you make money in poker.
Yep. I love it. Regular listeners will know that's been something that Rob's been on about for the last while, talking about how the value bets drive our poker strategy. And I just love this point that Joe made here as well, that Rob was picking up on, that GTO is really trying to create a solution for every possible hand and every possible decision point that hand can go through, all the different flops it can see, all the different sizes available. And it's sort of like, in the big picture, here's how you could play poker and you would be very hard to play against. So if you're playing against some other GTO bots, defense like that is really important. If you're not, the way to win at poker is by your, you know, letting your opponents make bigger mistakes than you or more mistakes than you. And trust me, no one's out there playing GTO. So it's a good place to start from, but you're going to make your money by capitalizing on the mistakes of your opponents. And if you say, but Jim, I'm playing in a game where no one makes any mistakes. Well, then you are making a big mistake by playing in that game, sir or madam. And you should find a different poker game to play if winning is important to you. Because mostly you want to play with players that are about your level or a little worse, players that are going to make worse mistakes than you or bigger mistakes than you. That's how we make money. And I am always available. So, you know, look me up, send up the Bluffsterini signal and I'll come join your game. Easy money available. All right. Well, folks, I think that about wraps it up for this forums edition of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'd like to thank Rob Washam, John Somsky, Joe Coolis, and Chris Jones, and Outfocus Metal for that post. Of course, I want to thank the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. We'll see you soon. And you, the listeners, thank you so much. So stick around for the chats edition next, and we'll see you next week. All right. Good night, everybody.